This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my company, Horns Boarding. Now this week saw us release our brand new clothing range. It's our spring range. What we've done with this collection is we've tried to put together a bunch of garments that you can wear no matter what the weather. We've got a bunch of new t-shirts. These ones I really like. We've got a Berserker Spirit t-shirt and an Ulfurdin Spirit t-shirt. What these are is that they've got a warrior in the middle, and then behind the warrior you've got the spirit of the animal that they're embodying. So behind the Berserker you've got a bear, and behind the Ulfurdin you've got a wolf. Alongside that, for those of you who like something a little bit more simple, we've got just a logo t-shirt. So it's our logo on the left hand side, and that comes in a heather navy and a woodland heather. And these t-shirts are 100% organic recycled cotton. Then we've got a new jogging pant which come in a men's and a women's, and we've also got a hoodie. So these are all in black with our logo embroidered on them. Again, with the hoodie, we're trying to keep in that theme of keeping things sustainable. So that's made from 85% organic cotton and 15% recycled polyester. And it's Global Organic Treaty certified and also Fair Weather Foundation certified. And finally, I think my favourite item from this launch is we've got a brand new 100% cotton jumper. Now, this jumper is absolutely perfect for me. You can wear it on its own, or you can layer it up and have a t-shirt under it and throw that on top for that little bit of extra warmth. It's really comfortable. It's really soft. Like I said, it's 100% cotton. The men's one comes in black and a beautiful olive colour. And then we do a women's one, which comes in a lovely navy colour as well. So yeah, just pop over to the website and check them out. Don't forget, you get that extra 10% discount off anything store-wide for listening to the podcast and for supporting the podcast. Just use Horns10 at checkout and you can get 10% off anything. Thanks for listening. Let's jump into the show. Welcome to the Nordic Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farron, co-owner of the company Horns Boarding, and I'm joined, as always, by Jordan Peterson, it appears. No, as always, by Dr. Matthias Nordvig. This week we got a lovely one-star review, because apparently we steal Jordan Peterson's ideas terribly, I think was the review.
Yeah, we produced them poorly.
And boring. Well, I think it was.
Boringly, yes.
So I think he was referring to you, not me.
I guess so. Like, I don't know. Like, I have no idea where that comes from. Like, I cannot say that I would, in any context, even bother to reproduce any of Jordan Peterson's thoughts. Like, it's a repackaged, watered down Jungian philosophy. It's like, come on, man. Like,
I don't even really know who he is. I think I heard him on Joe Rogan once a while ago. But other than that, like,
He gained a bit of fame here and there because he, I don't know, he did a TED talk or some shit like that.
I think he's mainly from being on Joe Rogan, I imagine. Anybody who touches that podcast blows up. Yeah. So I think that's the only reason I know his name. But I was surprised to wake up to that this morning to see us be labeled boring.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're labeled a lot of things these days, you know, like everything from far right to far left to boring to Jordan Peterson. Like, I don't know.
I mean, Jewish liberal cook has to be my favorite one. Yes. No one, somebody will have to do something special to top that. So, Matthias, do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes. This time we are joined by Anatoly Pakhalenko from Nütlen. Nütlen, that's a, you know, what kind of music do we call it? Like Nordic ambience, something like that, you know, same style as Wardruna. Welcome to the show, Anatoly.
Thank you. Hi.
Do you have any suggestions to what do we call the genre of music that you make?
We are usually experiments with different genres of music, but it's usually something on the edge of the folk music, on the edge of shamanic and dark folk music. On one of the main things we are usually use basically traditional instruments, traditional musical instruments. So we have the small experiments in our last album. We have small experiments with guitars and drums, but it was just two songs, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. But yes, for us, it's our main thing. It's using traditional musical instruments. So it's a different part, different sides, different parts of folk music to play.
Right. Yeah. And just for everybody who's listening, so you are in Russia. You're in Kalachinsk, which is not far from Kazakhstan. So you're pretty far over in Siberia. And thank you for staying up late to talk to us.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you. I know we moved the episode forward a couple of hours, and it still is it 10 p.m. there now?
Yes, already 10 and 24. It's not far from midnight. But I have time before I sleep.
Hopefully you don't have a too busy of a day tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone's come up with a definitive name for the genre yet. There's been a few things kind of banded around, but I'm not... I mean, I think one that most people want to try and stay away from, I guess, is Viking music, which you tend to see so much of this stuff labeled.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, it's... Yes, because this music we play in, it's music similar like the new music style. It's Vikings, Nordic folk music. Because... Mm-hmm. When we start playing, start making this kind of this style of music, we played, start playing in 2030. We formed the Midland. Before this, we played folk rock music. It's flutes, guitars, and different drums. It's folk rock. But at 2030, we start to play the music on traditional musical instruments with swords in it. If I remember correctly, it was only from the famous band, it's only Varbruna played those times, and I don't heard any other bands. And we started to move in the similar way with Varbruna, with Einar Selvig, but with only with own ideas, with own influence.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, yeah, you've definitely been. You've been around a while. Like you said, it was 2013 when you started. I mean, personally, I guess I only really started finding out about this kind of music maybe 5 years ago. So what, 2006, 2015, 2016. So you guys had already been around a couple of years before I even entered this scene. I mean, what was it like then, right at the beginning? Because it seems that it's got bigger and bigger, and every year seems to have got bigger and more popular.
Yes.
What was it like at the start before this kind of resurgence, is really the big boom?
I think it's, you know, it's, if we remember the same, the heavy metal was born when the Black Sabbath start to use the distortion guitars and make the riffs, and the Black Sabbath make the new styles, yes, and old band. But Black Sabbath, when they stopped play, they not plan to make the heavy metal. They just wanted to be the sound like the Beatles or something like this, but heavy guitars. And you know, I think the same in this style of music. It's, of course, lot of bands, and every year the new, and not every year. I think every month as we can find the new bands who play the Vikings, shamanic, and something between Vikings and shamanic. And it's cool. It's interesting. But I think if we start to dig deeper, we will find a lot of difference, because most of from these bands have their own experience, have their own life experience. They come to this music, so you can find a lot of interest in. We can talk not only Varbruna, and we find the Foreign Dome, we find the Seder Blood from United Kingdom. It's a lot of interesting bands.
Absolutely. I think the more it grows, the more bands you get, the more you get subgenres within whatever this main genre is that we don't really even have a name for yet. You get subgenres within that of people because, you know, we've had guests on here like Andrew, the Sea Wolf. What he does is very, like you said, a lo-fi style. He's completely
different.
That's completely different to like what yourself, Wadruna do. And then even things with like Jonas Lorentzen with what he's doing with Nabala, that has quite an Indian influence, certainly for my ears. You have all these different bands that have their own little tweaks and their own, almost creating their own genres within a genre we need to start a name for it. Let's just come up with a genre name and let's keep it.
So, one of the words that we, or the descriptors that we use in scholarship, I mean, I'm working on this from a scholarly perspective. I work with, people who work with theory of music and crossing over with the cultural aspects that I know of course. I mean, we talk about it as neo-folk. That's like the main genre definition that we use. But that, of course, it's not the best way to describe it either, because a neo-folk is a very specific thing, I would say, tied to some very, very specific bands that have existed since, well, some of them since the late 70s, but really becomes a thing in the 90s. So, we see this type of music also classified as heavy metal sometimes. Definitely seen that in different contexts. And I mean, if anything, it is a form of modern folk, right? But it's also an interesting kind because it crosses over in so many different ways between cultures, right?
Yes, yes. But it's not, neo-folk, it's more music. It's more experimental for me. It's only my, I think that it's only my vision. The neo-folk, it's most, it's most free. It's more fusion music, but, especially I cannot tell about other bands. I can tell about all bands in this style, in this genre of music, but I can tell about our band. We are working with ritual traditional sources. We don't make the songs ourselves. So we, especially if we will talk about not Nordic, but if we will talk about our Siberian songs, because we've seen in a lot of Siberian traditional and ritual traditional songs of native tribes of Siberia. These tribes are living right now and they keep their tradition, and we just have contact with them. They help us to work with their material, their traditional and ritual songs and music and lyrics, and our Siberian songs. It's something like ethnographic, based on ethnographic records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I agree completely. Like neo-folk as a genre of music is a lot more, experimental.
Yes, it's a lot of, it's in neo-folk you have the most, more free space for your experiments because you make your songs, you make your lyrics out by yourself. Mm-hmm. But in our music, we take the old traditional ritual lyrics or songs and just give this new life, new sound.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, how far back does the traditional Siberian kind of music go? Because I know obviously we don't have any actual music from the Viking Age. We spoke about that before on here. You know, there's no instruments or written music. So how how far back does the Siberian stuff go time-wise?
Can you repeat, please? Because my English is not perfect, but and sometimes I go
out. My English certainly isn't perfect either. Matthias, you can probably do maybe a better job.
Well, so the songs that you guys are working with from the different tribes, do you know how old they are? Like, and also the musical traditions, how old are they?
Yes, it's very old because they keep the. If we start to look in the way, like over the world, different peoples, different traditions, yes. And if we will start to look in the way from the modern religions to the before, to the pagans tradition, and these tribes, they don't have gods. If I can tell more simple, they are living right now. They are religious. They have no gods. They have their spirits and their totems, like American Indians. The same, really the similar. It's not only one similar thing before the Siberian native tribes and the American Indians. I think it will be simple to understand them there. American Indians, it's okay. Once I can, I need my translator.
Okay. No problem. This is a first on the. I mean,
yes.
Go on.
I already here. And American Indian tribes, it's the descendants of the native Siberian tribes. If we will look to the Ice Age. In the Ice Age in northern part of Siberia, mm-hmm. Before Ice Age here, tribes live in the, by hunting. They're like in other parts of the world, the tribes live in. And when the Ice Age came to these lands, the tribes moving to find their lands for living, for keep their child and they tribe. And they moving to the Northern America, to Alaska territory, Canada, and the Northern American part. So if we will start to search, and you can find the similar names, the similar words, the similar ornaments in clothes between some American Indians and Native Siberian tribes. They keep the contacts for this time. And the same totems, the same beliefs, in the very, very similar. So, and the same tradition to scalping of people. Yes. We have the stories about when the first Russian settlements moving to Siberia from Russia. They have the battles between the Russian settlements and native tribes living here. And native Siberian tribes took the scalps from the Russian. Yes, because the same beliefs.
Yeah.
The same tradition.
Yeah. So that's actually
your accent terrifies me enough without talking about scalping.
It's no problem. We live in civilization, so now you can move into Siberia and nobody took your scalp.
That's good to hear.
Is good to hear.
We do have. Actually some archaeological evidence of scalping happening in Scandinavia too, like back in way back, I think it's in the Iron Age. So I think it's a pretty widespread tradition.
I mean, Anatoly, so obviously this you were talking about how there's so many links to North America and the Native Americans. So what made you musically go, I guess, the other direction and go to Scandinavia and kind of the Nordic side of things? and rather than maybe do Native American influenced music.
And Native American's music in it's one of my inspiration too, of course.
Okay.
Especially in drums and frame drums, percussion. It's mm-hmm. it's my inspiration from Native American, because I like the musical tradition. If we will talk about the rhythmic. Mm-hmm. In music. So, about Scandinavia. Oh, okay. We will continue to talk about the Siberia, like of the land, motherland of the people of the world. So, Siberia also motherland of the Ugorian people. Mm-hmm. Ugorian people, it's, name the three main country, three main European peoples. It's Sami, Finland, Finnish, and Hungarian. Mm-hmm. It's these people, it's motherland of these people, it's a Western Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
So tribes living here, especially we are working with the traditional songs and music. It's Ugorian. And this week we will present our new video and single called Ugra. It's a song it's a song about Ugra as the old name of Siberia. It's a motherland of the northern people of Europe. It's Finnish people, Sami people, and Hungarian people. The Hungarian people moved to Europe with Attila.
Mm-hmm. That's in the late 300s, in the 400s, that time period. You see the Magyar.
With Attila, and Sami and Finnish people have the strong contacts with the northern Europe, with the Scandinavia before this, and the tribes moving. Slowly moving there, but they have the one root. It's Ugorian people. It's all Finnish, and you can find in language. Mm-hmm. It's Hungarian language and Finnish language and Sami language is a similar language. Because
mm-hmm.
when we have the touring in Europe with our band and when we have the concert in Finland or Hungarian, you know, I don't understand anything what they have the very, very special language. It's a Finno-Ugorian language.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, this is the connection between Siberia and Europe, Northern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And second, not so interesting, not so history, not so maybe lyrics, but more poet, more prosaic, because me and my wife Natasha, our vocalist and composer, we're historians. We are studying history in State University, and I'm very interested in Vikings period and old Slavic period. I'm interested Slavic, old Slavic and Vikings from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And after I'm studying university the same. Natasha had her main research in university about the females in Viking society. And for us, it's very interesting, not only like the tradition of our lands and the power lands, but also for historians.
That's very interesting. I mean, there is a lot of, you know, crossover in different ways between, you know, Scandinavia and the Viking Age and Russia, of course.
This is, of course.
And it's like, I mean, in many ways, I would say that... And we talked about this a little bit when we had Leszek on, Leszek Gardiela, the archaeologist who works with, you know, Poland and Scandinavia, among other things. And And I mean, we see this historically, we see these crossovers from at least the 800s, but probably even before. We see these crossovers again and again. There's constantly Scandinavian kings or princes that marry a princess from somewhere in Poland, Russia.
The konungs of Rus, it was the Rurik and his brother, they came from Scandinavia.
Yeah, no, it's true. So we had that sort of like Scandinavian influence in the founding of the early Russian state.
Yes. It's very close contacts between the same the lands of Karelia and the Arkhangelsk, it's northern part of Russia. Sometimes it was the Scandinavian, sometimes it was Russian lands. And we have right now, we have some cities, some territories. It was early times, it was the lands of Scandinavians. So Vyborg. Vyborg, it's a city, it's Scandinavian city. Right now it's a Russian.
Yeah, there's a town in Denmark that has the same name, Vyborg.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Before we get on to, I guess, the historical links between Russia and Scandinavia, I want to know how popular is this this culture in modern day Russia and in kind of in your area, especially the music you make. Is this something that's popular amongst ordinary people, I guess, or everyday people in Siberia? Obviously, I mean, it's extremely popular in Scandinavia and in England, and in North America it's huge. So I just wondered how popular it was in Russia.
So it's basic only, I think you understand, if we will talk about this time, it's came popular, most popular scam. I will be liar if I will not tell it's Vikings series, you know, it's Vikings series and Marvel films. It's a popular, it's a very popular over the world.
Everywhere.
Yes, in Kazakhstan too, believe me. Yes, because it's a popular show. It's a very cool fantasy. It's very high budget fantasy show. It's they show us how the Vikings can maybe Vikings looks like these hipsters, but of course me as historian, for me it's just like the fantasy, and I understand it because they don't have nothing with the real history, with a real tradition. But I think it's a good. I think it's a cool. It's I like this show because there are a lot of people coming to interested to this, and some of these people start to dig deeper, and some of these people start to touch the something more deeper than only popular pop culture. This is cool. So if we will talk about this Nordic culture, yes, Nordic culture popular in Russia only like over the world. Because we have the Viking series, we have the different series like Vikings, about the films, new films about Vikings, and only this. And music, yes, it's one of all the things of the why this music is popular. But I can tell this, of course, in Europe, in or in America, we meet most people who interested in this culture, who interested in this music, because for European and American people, this is more closer than the pop culture, than the popular culture, because especially when we play our concerts in Norway, in Denmark, in Sweden, we see the people who who close, for whom they're, this culture, this tradition is very close. When we played in Norway on Midgard's World Metal Festival, it was there very amazing when the people sing with us. The people know these songs, you know, these songs for people's, not only, you know, something, don't understand, but only sounds. But these songs for people in Norway, in Denmark, in Scandinavia, in some parts of Poland, Germany, I don't know, in Italy, we need the people who know these songs like the tradition, not just sounds, not just something cool and interesting, but like tradition. And this is important. I think this is cool. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. The people, I guess they'll connect with it a little bit more, and it's more take a deeper interest than just putting it on because because it's cool and interesting. It is their music, just like anybody would listen to. You know, I put metal on or rock on or whatever you listen to. It's the same thing. That's their go-to music. It's not a hip thing, I guess.
Yes.
My other question was, obviously, I don't know if you've seen all of the Vikings TV show, but the last three series are quite heavily influenced by having like the Rus Vikings in there. They play a really big part, and I wondered whether that would have influenced an interest in Russia, because it's not necessarily. I don't think it. Maybe they weren't a branch of quote unquote Vikings that a lot of people might not have heard of. If it wasn't for the Vikings TV show really putting them in as a major part in the last few series.
No, I don't. I don't know. Unfortunately, or maybe no, I don't. We don't saw the Vikings series. Maybe after the Ragnar Lodbrok was killed, and after this, we maybe see the. One or two episodes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
that's
and,
maybe for the better.
Yes. Because just for me, I don't like what start to happen later. It's something not. I don't like the characters. Mm-hmm. Maybe actors played not good, but I for me I image the Ivar Boneless not like this actor who played in.
I completely agree.
And the other characters the same. Of course, yes, I know the Russian Conan played Danila Kozlovsky, Russian actor, the main Russian, one of the famous Russian actor. Mm-hmm. Danila Kozlovsky played in Viking series Oleg. Russian Conan Oleg, yes. Yes, for me, Danila Kozlovsky, it's very, I like the films, Russian films with this actor. I don't know how he played this history character, but as I can say, the Oleg, this Conan, this Russian Conan, don't have any travels to Scandinavia, because his contacts was usually as a historian, I can say. Yes, Oleg, it was the. I must use my translator.
Go for it.
I was just looking in to see if it was the actor I thought it was, because I think the main Rus. Guy plays it really well. I think he's a good actor, and it's a good character. He's a nasty little shit.
Yes.
But it's like I'd be interested to know how many people found out about the Rus Vikings from that TV show. Even people who were really interested in Vikings as a group of people, not necessarily the TV show. How many people then learn of this subsect, I guess?
No, Russian Vikings, it was the really the they look in the same because Russian in if we will talk about the Russian in the ages of the Vikings period, so Russian it's had the Rus, not Russian. Russian it's a Russian Empire. Russian it's Russia. It's the country from the seventh century. But before this, we had the Rus. Mm-hmm. It's two main territories of Rus is Kiev and mm-hmm. Novgorod.
Mm-hmm.
So Kiev, it's a territory of the South Rus. Novgorod, it's a territory of Northern Rus. And all contacts with Vikings, main contacts with Vikings in Scandinavia was in Novgorod. Novgorod territory had contacts, maybe everyday contacts with Scandinavians.
Mm-hmm.
It northern territory, northern land. And they had the same swords, the same helmets, the same the chained arms, and the same weapons. It's like the Vikings, because it was the one tradition. It was the very similar tradition. It was very, very close contacts, the trade contacts, the weaponry contacts, the cultural contacts, because archaeologists found a lot of the runes and the weapons and the Mjolnirs of Vikings, mm-hmm. Mjolnirs in the old, in the lands of graves near Novgorod territory, around Novgorod. Because
yeah.
in Novgorod, we it's a northern Rus, and they had that. So, and the Russian Vikings looking the very, very similar like the Scandinavian Vikings. But yeah. if we will talk about Kiev, it's southern territories. So Kiev had the most close contacts with the Great Steppe, Great mm-hmm. Plains territories. It's a lot of nomads. So arms and weaponry of the Kiev's army was the most light, not so heavy armor, not so heavy weapon. So it was the bows, crossbows, it was the leather armor, it was the for fast movements, for fast battle on the horses.
Mm-hmm.
But it was only when they have the contact with the southern land. On the northern, we can find the same, the drakars, ships, the same heavy swords, the same the heavy armor, and the same.
Right. No, that's a good point. One thing I was actually thinking about, so what we usually see with like, stories about Vikings, fictions, like for instance, in the first season of the show Vikings, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's always like this thing of like they go and they go to battle and raid in like the east, right? Which is like Russia or, you know, Estonia or something like that. And to me, it's always sort of a weird way of like describing the relationships between Scandinavia and the Russian area in general, because it's like it's very like reductive. They don't really make any point out of pointing out contacts and interactions, right? It's always
yes,
like
the one main territory for their contacts is the Baltic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Baltic Sea, it's a main territory of the contacts. So the Russian, Swedish, Norway, Denmark, and the German, mm-hmm. Polish, it's a Baltic Sea. It's mm-hmm. a Baltic Sea, it's a land of, it's a lake of Vikings and yeah. Vikings culture. Of course, yeah. not Vikings like the people, but if we will talk about Vikings like the culture. So Baltic Sea and all lands around Baltic Sea, it's a lands of Vikings culture. Yeah. I think it's true because it's the mainland. So, of course, Vikings have a lot of different raids and travels to the, you know, the Northern America and Greenland and Iceland and the Northern Africa and a lot of, but the main, I think it's the Baltic Sea and the lands around the Baltic Sea. You can find it. Okay. Vikings culture.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that maybe clears a lot up for me because I always maybe just assumed wrongly, as always, that maybe a group of Scandinavian peoples came from left Scandinavia and moved into like the Northern Rus territory, I guess, and then created their own community there. But it seems maybe that those people just traded together.
Yes.
So rather than a group of people moving there and creating a community, the people that were already there just traded with the Scandinavians, and that's how you got these influences and the culture kind of getting swapped. It wasn't a case of them just moving from one area to the other and kind of taking over, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's more of a, you know, a steady trickle of influence, right? Mm-hmm. Back and forth. You can also see this in Scandinavia. There are plenty of examples of Eastern European pottery that in the Viking Age in places in Scandinavia. You have building styles in Sweden that are being influenced by the Eastern Baltic. Burial styles as well. Like, there's a great example of this. So in the area around Stare Ladoga, and I'm mispronouncing that, but in that area, there's this tendency to bury people by burning them and then putting them in little urns and then placing a little clay tablet with a beaver paw or a bear paw on top of them. That also starts showing up in the Åland archipelago off the coast of Sweden. So there's like an influence there where people from that area have influenced their traditions.
So it's not just a case of Viking culture going one direction.
No,
it's going both ways. You're getting,
yeah.
I guess, Rus and Russian influence coming over to Scandinavia.
If you ask me in this time period from around 700 and up to 1100, what you should really be talking about is more like common cultural patterns that stretch from like Scandinavia as like the western point of this and far into Eastern Europe, into Russia, as the eastern point of this. Like that's largely common cultural patterns.
Okay.
You can also see this in mythology. You can see similarities in stories across these different peoples. And so really the main thing that sort of like separates, if anything is separating at this point, is like language, right? And this seems to be something that isn't really a big problem to them anyway. So,
Yes, and we don't must to forget the famous the way from the Variag to Greeks. If you know what I mean, if you understand the great way from the Scandinavian to Constantinople. So it's great way. It's great trade way. It's more not so dangerous to trade, moving this way through the Rus territories. It's not so dangerous like if you moving to trade to England, like if you're moving to trade to France or other. And this is another one main reason why the Scandinavian, especially from Swedish land, moving to the eastern lands, not to west, but to east, because they was interested to trade on the way from the Varagian to Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And the same, lot of the Vikings and Variags, Variags, it's Russian Vikings.
Yeah.
A lot of Vikings and Varyags serve as a bodyguards on the Constantinople king,
mm-hmm.
emperor of Constantinople.
Yeah.
A lot of the Constantinople emperors had the main bodyguards. It was Vikings and Varyags.
Yeah. That's a good point. And what we're also seeing, of course, is that a lot of silver from finds its way all the way through Russia into Scandinavia. And this is, I think, the main theory is that it's because the Scandinavians are transporting slaves all the way to the Caliphate in Baghdad. So you have that trade route, right? And this is generally a very lucrative business also for the Russian principalities, right, in Novgorod and in Kiev, because they can, you know, tax that, they can provide protection for the caravan,
and they have their own settlements in Kiev, in Novgorod, and the territories on this way. They have their own settlements who live in by the tradition and laws of Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
So, and archaeologists finds these settlements and on territories on the Volga River. It's one of the main Russian river. On the banks of the Volga River, they found the different settlements of Scandinavia.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, we also see, like, even in places like in Denmark, we see archaeological material all the way from Central Asia, from places like Kazakhstan, that shows up in Scandinavia. So there are contacts, strong contacts, even.
I wonder how many people were. I wonder where my brain goes sometimes. How many people were maybe taking the journey to trade in Constantinople or somewhere like that, and then got halfway, like, I like it here. I'm going to stay here. Like, I'm going to find a little bit of land and stay here. Like, that surely must have happened. So you must just get these little pockets of maybe like different Scandinavian DNA or whatever.
I think popping up here a lot, man.
just popping up here and there. And the other crazy thing is, like, the people back home will just never know what happened to them. Like, because time is obviously different now. Like, now if you go out for a few hours, like, your wife is like, where are you? Why are you not back? Or, but you know what I mean? It was just like, you can always get a hold of somebody. You know, if I go out, Sarah can ring me and say, where are you? What time are you going to be home? Whereas, you know, back 1,000 years ago, it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to Constantinople. See you in 6 months. And then we're like, what if you just don't come back? It's like, I guess they just assume you're either dead or you just decided to start a new life somewhere else.
That definitely happened. I mean, and you know what? What also happened from time to time, I'm sure, is that some Viking somewhere, say in Kirkpang in Norway, he's like, I'm going to go to the tavern. And then he finds himself on a ship not so long after he went to the tavern, on his way to fucking Constantinople.
his wife just must never know. And it must just be
so
normal,
actually,
I guess. That people just don't turn back up again.
We do have, so, I mean, there's contact, right, in different ways. There's also messages that are going back and forth. We have runestones in Scandinavia that mention when somebody died in Russia.
But I mean, I can't disappear and then just leave a runestone for Sarah to find out in 30 years. Oh yeah, he died in a journey to Russia. She'd be like, "What? Can't do that."
No, they would send a little, you know, little carved rune stick to
wreck with rune somebody. Sticks, yeah.
If I did that, you want to see the fucking stick that I'd get back. It wouldn't be writing on it, I tell you that. I always find that very interesting how it's changed over time. I think even, you know, even just 50 years ago, the difference in how the being away from people was just it was what it was. You know, you would just go out and you would be back when you're back. But whereas now everybody has to know where everybody is every minute, and I find it fascinating how much it's changed and how intolerant people are. I guess because
that's true. I mean, you know, people send a message on, you know, some kind of messaging app, and then they expect you to respond to it or to get back to you within a certain time. You know,
are you looking at me? Is this a hint at me here?
No.
We get all the time through the business. We'll get, you know, we're an English company, we're a British company. We make that pretty clear. But we'll get maybe a message from somebody in America, and it's Sunday as well, so it might be like 11 o'clock our time on a Sunday night, which maybe granted might be like 6 o'clock in wherever, like let's say New York, whatever. 6 o'clock for them, still on a Sunday, and then we won't reply, and I wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Why haven't you replied? ? Or just another ? And it's like, I'm fucking asleep. What do you mean? Like, I wouldn't. I think the way people act has changed as well. Like, I wouldn't dare do that to a company. Like, just reply with a ? Or even just common decency when people write emails to be like, hi, and then the part of the question, and then be like, thanks, so-and-so. Sometimes you just get like, where's this? Or can you do this? And it's like,
I need you to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Who taught you just common decency?
I have students who send me emails like that.
Like, just say hi. It goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, just be nice. Like,
yes.
Brief introduction before you start demanding things.
That was my little tangent on people disappearing, I guess.
Your little rant.
It's something that's definitely fascinated me because, you know, 100 years ago, people would have just gone to the pub and then turned up 2 days later, and it would just be normal. And
or getting shanghaied and then turning up somewhere in Indonesia or something like that on a ship.
Yeah, it's you wouldn't get away with it now, I don't think. So, one thing we said we were going to talk about, which we haven't yet, is the whole Disney kind of Loki thing. It's probably we're a little behind the times, but we didn't record last week, so that's why we're late. But I think it's worth talking about. Anatoly, I know you saw a little bit about it, but not too much spoke about it before the show. And I guess a quick overview is that apparently there was a big outrage that Disney were trying to trademark the name Loki or the god as such, and people were outraged. And I took a very different stance, and I kind of defended Disney on this and took their corner. And I don't know if that was because I'm a business owner or I looked into it a little more. And
well, I mean,
one thing
that has to be mentioned here is that it's not actually Disney that has done anything here. It's that particular site, Redbubble, is that what they're called?
Mm-hmm.
That took sort of like a preventative measure to take down somebody's art that they're putting on a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a picture of what that was, and it looked very close to the Disney configuration of Loki. So
yeah, I think Anatoly, when we spoke before, you kind of said, oh yeah, I'd heard or seen that Marvel were trying to trademark Loki, and I think that's what most people have seen, this kind of thing that was shoved out there, and this opinion that's not necessarily true. I just wonder what was it that you saw.
So I think the if we will talk about Marvel, it's just the fantasy characters. Mm-hmm. I think, of course, yes, of course, is the somebody that drew the Loki, the same or the similar Loki like the in Marvel or Disney show, the Thor or the other, maybe other different, or Spider-Man or Iron Man or Batman, nobody. So Marvel's Loki for me, it's the same like the Joker or Batman or mm-hmm. Catwoman. It's just the comics character. But I think we have the very special things, untouchable, without the copyrights. I think the things like the traditional, something traditional, this is heritage of the peoples, it's a heritage of the cultures, of the nations, the heritage, the gods and the beliefs, and I think it must be difference between mm-hmm. the Disney Loki, Marvel Loki, like the trademark, mm-hmm. and the Loki as a god or the name mm-hmm. or the symbol of the traditional culture. It's not only Loki; we can find a. Of course, in this case, any company, any commerce corporation can took the any traditional person, Jesus. Yes, they can they can take the Jesus or some other religious character from any religion and make the comics or series about mm-hmm. him. And yes, Jesus is only a Disney trademark, mm-hmm. and it's all, yes, yeah. And it will be good. I think it's a great business idea for Disney. Don't show to them this podcast, because I'm afraid they will. Yes, and I think you understand what I mean. My English is not good, but my senses,
I think what you're saying is that this is those characters are their interpretation of the gods, that's it's their own version of Loki or Thor. It's not the actual gods, it's just how they've decided to kind of take them, put them into their universe, make them their little superheroes. And they are, unfortunately, I guess, the way that a lot of people find out about these gods, and then people just automatically associate Marvel's version with the real version. But you need to remember that it is just Marvel's version that they created.
I think it will be normal if we will have the copyrights for the images of Marvel's Loki and the copyrights of a logo of mm-hmm. of Loki, of Disney logo of Loki. It's not problem. Loki or Thor or
that's a really good point. Like, this is
just images, just a logo, just trademark of mm-hmm. logo, but they cannot make trademark of the culture, traditional culture. Oh. it's not normal. It's something crazy.
And that's such a good point. I mean, because let's just keep something in mind. This is something that has existed in Northern Europe for about 150 years. Different products that are named after the Nordic gods. Like my mom's hometown has a beer called Thor, right? Mm. So that's a trademark. You can't mess with that, and that's fine. But it doesn't mean that they have like stolen the god, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I think in this particular case with the Disney thing, I think it was insane that people. Because I'd be the first to defend the gods if somebody was trying to actually copyright just the term Loki. But if you look at what they actually did or what Rebel did, you it's hard to disagree with them. So basically, I think the argument was that in their comic, the character Loki was wearing a T-shirt. There was like it's a white T-shirt with green sleeves, and it said Loki as in L-O-W space K-E-Y. Right.
I think and he also had like the horns, right?
Maybe. Yeah, so that was just a t-shirt that they had put in the Marvel comic, in the Loki comic, which you can see here. So that's one that they've created in their comic. The person on Redbubble, what they've done is just made that t-shirt.
Yes.
So they've made that exact t-shirt from within the Marvel comic and then sold it. So Redbubble have gone, well, hang on a minute, that's not your property. You haven't come up with that design. I mean, it's just a terrible design anyway, but they've just gone, you haven't come up with that. You've taken that from the comic. So you have just basically, you just stolen from them, which is what they had done. So as much as it pains me to kind of back Disney on something, they would be well within their right to push it, because you can't just steal something from a comic that you see and go, oh, well, I'm going to sell that now and make some money from it, because I'd be pissed if somebody did that of something I did.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And this is why I have deactivated my Facebook account. Like, this, I am so sick of how things get blown out of proportions on social media all the time, and then all of a sudden you have like this outrage by a bunch of people who don't really know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, we really, really need to take a step back, chill the fuck out, and stop constantly, getting, wound up by those, rage circles that that happen on social media all the time.
Yeah, we do. I think we're still very new to social media as a community, as a culture, as a people's. It's something that's kind of only really grown the last 10 years. I think we're just not really used to it. And obviously Facebook show you what you interact with, and people tend to interact with things they don't like or that makes them angry. So you just get stuck in this cycle of seeing more stuff that pisses you off.
Yeah, exactly. And what kind of life is that? Just constantly walking around being pissed off.
I mean, yeah, just constantly angry. I mean, Anatoly, do you ever get any issues on your social medias, or is it relatively plain sailing? Do you just kind of post and disappear, and that's it? Or do you get any trolls, I guess, or any issues?
Yeah, so for me, social medias, I'm using social medias only for my music. It's not for more. And and for contact with my friends, I have the email. But Facebook and Instagram, just for sharing music of our band. It's only. Not for more, because for social media, especially Facebook and Russian, we have Russian VKontakte. It's a lot of people who don't, I don't know, it's not for knowledge, and it's not for good experience, it's just for marketing.
Yeah.
Just for me, it's marketing place, it's not more.
Yeah,
but that I guess that's the other side of it, though. It is a very good marketing tool. It is good for sharing your music. It's good for us to share the podcast on there. It's good for me to share my business on there. So it does, as much as you can complain, it does have its benefits in that sense, that you can get stuff out to new audiences that you wouldn't be able to without it, and it does help spread cool shit.
Especially if you can piss them off.
I think that's the other thing. Like, people do tap into that, though, don't they? Like, this whole thing with going back to like, the Loki and this Disney t-shirt thing, that will only do that whole thing of the kicking off. People will be mad at Disney for like 10 minutes. But you can't do that. Nah.
Yeah.
Stamp the feet for like 10 minutes. But they'll still tune into the next Marvel film, or they'll still tune in.
Yes.
Go
yes.
buy yes. the next Disney thing. So it only puts Disney in people's mouths, in their minds. So it's only ultimately good for them. You know, the saying is no publicity is bad publicity. And it's very true. If you can withstand the shit that comes to start with, it only makes you bigger. It only makes the name bigger. It only makes Disney bigger. We're all fucked.
I think you're right about that.
So, and another way, you mentioned, I think you have a new single coming out. Is it tomorrow, Thursday, the 7th, I believe?
Thursday.
Yeah, so it will already be out by the time this releases to the general public. What's the inspiration behind that?
Our next single inspiration, and if we will talk you ask me about next single, yes?
The single, or I know it's off the, what's going to be the album. Is the album going to be called Ritual?
Yes, it will be. Next single will be about Siberia. It will be Siberia. It will be Siberia and a shamanic song. It will be a real, I must use my translator.
No problem.
It will be, real shamanic chant. The song will start and end from the real shamanic chant, Siberian shamanic chant. And this is a song of the spirits keeper of the Ugrites, ancient name of Siberia, ancient territories, ancient name of the territories of the Western and Northern Siberia and Ugra. And this song, this single, it's a song to the spirit keeper of this territory, and the song named Ugra. And before the album release in August, we will have our third single, Svartraun. It's a Scandinavian ballad. Very interesting, and it will be especially, it will be not movie, it will be, we work with talented animators here in big city not far from us, from the filming company animator. They make the animation film to the song Svartraun. It's very interesting for us. For me, it's one of the main song of upcoming album, Ritual, because for me, it's very epic, very deep senses in this song, for me, especially for me. It's very interesting thought and lyrics and the music. The song about Black Raven who flying over the battlefield and the man dying on the battlefield, the Viking dying on the battlefield, speak with the Black Raven and ask this raven to bring his words to his wife, to his child, and he died with honor. And
because he disappeared in the middle of the night and didn't let her know.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got the raven to go let her know. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't come back from the pub.
So it's if we will back to our talking about the connection between the Russian and Scandinavian culture, we can find in Russian tradition, we can find the song Black Raven. It's a Russian warriors song with the very similar lyrics, very similar things in the song. Mm-hmm. It's a song about the Cossack warrior dying on the battlefield and asking Black Raven to bring his words to his wife.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really cool.
It's really similar. Mm-hmm. And when we found the Svartraun lyrics, old Norse lyrics, it was something. It cannot be really, because it's very similar between the ancient Scandinavian song, ancient Scandinavian ballads, and the Russian 19th century song, Cossack song. It's, of course, it's a different melody. Of course, it's a different words, but it's the similar meaning. It's it's the same meaning in both songs, Scandinavian and Russian, Old Norse and the 19th century Cossack Sverdlov song.
That's really interesting.
And yes, and this is why we took these songs as a third single.
I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, that must be a common thing though on the battlefield to see so many ravens when there's so much sort of death and gore. So it makes sense that this theme would carry. I'm sure it carries across other cultures as well, because ravens are always there when there's something dead about.
That is true.
Mateus, one thing I wanted to quickly ask you before I guess we wrap this up. Obviously, we had forgot his name, Luke, on when we spoke about the Blood Eagle. And I guess it was just the idea that, that maybe the Blood Eagle was just ravens or eagles eating the bodies after they died, and not this. Obviously, we spoke about it in depth in that episode for anybody that wants to go back and listen to it. Luke Murphy, is that, am I right?
Yeah. Yes. Luke
John Murphy, that's it. And we spoke about it in depth in that. And it's something that I see pop up on these Facebook groups to go back to social media over and over again, at this image this of like, usually from Vikings, of the typical of the typical Blood Eagle. And it's like, it's probably not that. And then I wondered, obviously there is the runestone with the man who kind of like bent over with the eagle. It looks like an eagle behind it. A lot of people say this is the Blood Eagle, but for me, it just seemed to make sense that it's probably referring to the eagle or the raven eating, coming and eating the flesh after. And that song just reminded me of that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I mean, the motif of an eagle. And also, let's just keep in mind that you know, being prostrated, tied to a rock or and something like that, you know, exposed to birds of prey in different ways. That's a great way to torture somebody to death. Let's just keep that in mind. The whole Prometheus, right? Like tied to a rock, and the eagle, you know, pecking at his liver and all that stuff. I mean, it makes sense as a way of, you know, as a sort of, I would say upper strata of society kind of punishment for people as well. So let's keep that in mind. Like if there's anything you can say about humans, is that they've always found very creative ways and very, very nasty ways to kill each other. And
it's Siberian tradition.
And so, like, I could easily see how you could, for instance, have a tradition of torturing people to death by exposing them to birds of prey, if you can find a way to lure them there, for instance, you know. That could be eagles, it could be ravens, it could be, you know, a lot of things. And just like, you know, people have found ways to do that with ants, you know, just dip somebody in honey and then dig them into a hole, and then the ants will come and eat them, which is a pretty gruesome way to kill somebody, if you ask me.
The rat on the belly with the...
rat on the belly.
With the with the bucket, and you warm the bucket up.
Yep.
That's always movie. You learn all this stuff from movies. But I think, I don't know if I'm dreaming this. Did we speak about ravens and eagles being very described very similar or not? Or not always being able to tell the difference between the two when it comes to...
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you... when it comes to, like, the old Nordic poetry, of course, there are different words, right? And sometimes we can easily distinguish ravens from eagles in the poetry. But in other cases, we get, you know, multiple kennings for like birds of prey. That could be many different kinds of birds of prey. And you know, the motif of the bird of prey is incredibly popular as well in Old Norse poetry. So it makes sense that raven and eagle sometimes, you know, mixes together. Also hawk and raven, and mm-hmm. Hawk and eagle, for that matter. They come together in different ways, because quite often the most important thing is to basically just, you know, have a bird of prey in there for some kind of dramatic effect, right?
Mm-hmm. So. I think we will speak more about that when we have Rún and Jonas on, and we speak about Rún's idea of the raven totem, and then Jonas lets us know his opinions on it. And, you know, we went through that last week. It'll be a bit of a debate episode, I guess, but we've booked it back in, and we'll get to it.
Yes.
Looking perfect. Forward. Anatoly, thank you very much for joining us. Do you just want to let people know where they can find your music, the best place to listen to it, download it, your social medias?
So I don't know. You can find us on Spotify, on Bandcamp, on Apple Music, on the SoundCloud, and I think everywhere, because we have a lot of places with our music.
Yeah.
But I think the Spotify will be will be better, because on Spotify we have all our songs, especially songs not released on CDs, on vinyls. Songs only digital releases we have on Spotify. And on Spotify we also have our record of the Russian songs Black Raven. We released it 1 year ago, last August. So if you're interested, you can find it. It's a monochrome video. It's with a sword in the grass and the song Black Raven in our arrangement. It's a Russian Black Raven on the Russian language.
Oh, perfect. What's your Instagram?
Instagram Midland official.
Okay, perfect. Matthias, where can everybody find you? Even now, I can't tell them to add you on Facebook anymore.
You can't add me on Facebook anymore. I'm done with that bullshit.
He'll be back. We'll get him back.
Oh hell no, no, no! I have been like for years thinking I need to get off Facebook, and now I've finally deactivated. So I doubt that I will be back. But you can find me on Instagram. I do still appreciate people's art there. So that's a place to find me. And that's really it. Yeah.
Oh, you're going off the grid.
Oh, totally. Find me in the woods, man. Of course, you can also always try to see if I've posted a new cranky blog about something.
I know, you can't even share that on Facebook anymore. What are you going to do?
You can share it for me.
There we go. Perfect. If you enjoy the show, please take a minute to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review. Not a 1-star rating calling us Jordan Peterson, please. We don't want any more of those. So if everybody listening goes and gives us a 5-star rating and a nice review, and if you put in it absolutely not like Jordan Peterson, we would really appreciate it, and we can just bump that one out of the way so we don't have to look at it anymore. I know it's not ideal to just pop on there and leave a review. People ask me to do it all the time, and I don't. But I'm asking you, please, jump on there, leave us a review. Honestly, it does help people find the show. I don't want people popping up and looking at the latest review and seeing that piece of shit that guy left. I'm assuming it's a guy. How bad of me. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, at Nordic Mythology Podcast, our website, nordicmythologypodcast.com. You can grab some merch off us. YouTube, Nordic Mythology Podcast, again. And then, obviously, if you really like the show, Patreon really helps us keep growing the show, helps us get new equipment, helps us employ people to help us out, you know, really kind of boost stuff. And that's just Nordic Mythology Podcast on Patreon. You get to join us live for the show and join in the live chat, but also you get access to watch me and Mateus talk about Vikings, the TV show. We watch an episode every week after the main show, and we just let you know our opinion as we go through. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Antoine. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, guys.